Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. We have another whiskey to review.
Jumping right into it. Hi, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. So up on the board for the whiskey review, we have the Glenlivet Founders Reserve Edition.
Single malt.
Yeah, it's a single malt. It's a Speyside whiskey, which is the region that it's from. And, you know, I guess going directly to the actual whiskey itself, well, tell me what you think first.
I think it's okay. I mean, probably I gave Redbush a... I think I judge Scotch on a different scale than Irish whiskey. I just expect more from Scotch. It's not usually as sweet, so I expect more flavor profile beyond that. And this is kind of...
It's kind of boring,
yeah.
Right, and I'm, so, I mean, it's...
It's so clean, it's...
It is, so it's Glenlivet. Glenlivet is a, I guess... It's a relatively basic Scotch. It's a Scotch that everybody knows. It's mass-produced. You know, this is their Founders Reserve Edition. Doesn't taste a whole lot more different than their standard 12-year.
I doubt I could tell the difference.
So it's a little sweeter, and it almost has like a creamy ale taste to it, if that makes sense. Like a cream soda-esque sort of taste to it. It's a little, like I said, this is particularly a little sweeter than they normally go, and maybe that's why, you know, they're giving it a little spin with the Founders Reserve. But it's not a, you know, Glenlivet's not going to blow your socks off, blow your doors off sort of Scotch. Almost every offering from Glenlivet is going to be at 80 proof. Now, you know, just because a Scotch
is this, because I didn't look.
They all are.
Okay.
I don't have to look, but I can and tell you that it is 40% alcohol by volume, therefore it's 80 proof.
Okay.
And that's going to be pretty standard for Glenlivet. Johnny Walker is the same way. Johnny Walker Blue, there are some versions of Johnny Walker Blue that I think come in at like an 83 proof. But for the most part, like all your Johnny Walkers are going to be 80.
Johnny Walker to me is just the better it gets, the smoother it gets, but the taste is the same.
Right, exactly. And that's, again, that's okay. You know, it's a Johnny Walker is another well advertised Scotch, but in terms of flavor profile, you know, you can give me a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue at $250 a bottle, and I can go and spend $70 a bottle on a single malt. And Johnny Walker's a blend, so it's a little bit different,
right?
But I can go find a single malt for, you know, let's say $80 for less than half the cost. That's going to have a much more complex flavor profile and a much better overall flavor. You know, back to this Glenlivet, you know, this is the sort of thing that you put out for the person who wants to drink Scotch but has no idea what they're drinking. So it comes in a nice wrap.
Yeah, it looks great.
The box looks good. It's wrapped in this fancy paper. The bottle is nice. It's got a great design. You know, you could pour it. They can take a picture and put it on Instagram and say, hey, look how fancy I am. But in terms of taste, it's nothing that's going to blow their mind. But if they don't have a matured palate that knows what to taste for, then that's about what they need. You know, something...
To be honest, I bought this because I haven't had Glenlivet or Glenfiddich in a very long time. And I thought, oh, well, you know, let's break those out. I mean, we both favor the Islay Scotches. We both like the big, smoky, peaty ones. And this is definitely not that.
No.
Supposed to be. I understand.
Well, and I think the one thing I do want to put out there about it is that this is still a good tasting Scotch.
I agree.
And I think, you know, for me, I've kind of ventured away, you know, I kind of started with the Glenlivets and the Glenmorangies and kind of worked my way through some of the Johnny Walkers and then started to get into some more diverse Scotches with different flavor profiles. And so, you know, we're kind of going backwards, but I think it's important, as we do more in the way of actually talking about whiskey, since the name of the show is Whiskey Congress, I think it's important that we do talk about some of the more basic Scotches And even just for you, you're a whiskey drinker. You do like some of the bigger ones, but I think that you and I combined, and especially with some of the diverse scotches that I bring to the table and diverse whiskeys, not just scotches and Irish whiskeys, but your Japanese whiskeys and your Indian whiskeys, your French whiskeys that actually taste very, very similar to a lot of your different style scotches. I think that will kind of help kind of expand, the listener's idea of what whiskey really is and what it's all about. And we can't forget the American whiskeys and bourbons and things like that, which we definitely will not.
Next up will be bourbon.
Yeah. But we don't want to discriminate against them either. I think they're all great. If you ask me my favorite, I would basically tell you whichever one is right in front of me at that point in time. So Glenlivet, Founder's Reserve. I'm going to give you a 5.
I'm going to match that.
Not bad.
Not bad, no. And I mean, I think we judge on a pretty harsh scale. I mean, certainly this bottle is not going to go to waste. And I would say this, if we were smoking cigars, which we're not because we're in our studio, this might be a good scotch to drink with cigars because you really wouldn't need the smoke because you'd have a cigar.
Yeah, I mean, so that's
a thought. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's, so there's a tricky thing about that, though. And so I've thought about that. Some people love a nice, meaty, flavored whiskey, a big-bodied whiskey with a big-bodied cigar. And other people don't like the mixing of the two because it can be too much, right? And if you have a whiskey with a stronger smoke flavor to it and you're smoking a cigar with a certain type of flavor palette where not everything lines up, then it creates a weird sort of synergy in your mouth and you're like, I don't like this. And I've done that before, so, I mean, it all depends. You try to go with a Laphroaig, right? And then you smoke
which
a
is
cigar,
one of my favorites, yeah.
Right, and then you go and you smoke some sort of like a double Lajero cigar, and it's just like that's a lot of flavor and not a lot of different flavors going on, on your palate at the same time and not always a good combination, so.
All right, well, so we both give Glenlivet Founders Reserve a 5.
But it is a nice bottle. I give the bottle like an 8.
Yeah, aesthetically, it's beautiful. The box is beautiful. The bottle's nice.
The color, the actual coloring is good. The funny thing is, a lot of whiskey is dyed.
It's not supposed to be.
Not necessarily dyed, but
they use artificial color.
Yeah.
Which is, no, I didn't. That's cheating.
It is a little bit.
I would call shenanigans on that. All right, man. So sorry for jumping right in, but there was whiskey in front of me, and I wanted to taste it. How's your day going?
Listen, every day is a grind, Jim.
Every day
is a grind.
And every day is a blessing. Let's be
honest. Yes. So, I saw something funny online. It was Charlie Brown sitting next to Snoopy, and Charlie Brown said, one day we're going to die. And then, Snoopy says, yeah, but every other day we're not. So,
right.
And I read that actually just today, and it made me chuckle a little bit at my desk. And I was like, that's a great point. To your point that, every day that you're here is a blessing, even if you happen to get kicked in the nuts during that day, which didn't physically happen, but metaphorically
yes. So I was home today and I got to listen to a Sarah Huckabee Sanders press conference, which is always a pleasure.
Your girl.
My girl. Sadly, she's taken. The double last name gave it away. Anyway.
That's all that gave it away.
Yeah, right. So she was deflecting and whatever, but there's a new trend in the right-wing spin on the Russia investigation. So our buddy Sebastian Gorka said on Breitbart, and I think it got played on Fox as well, basically saying that the uranium deal made by the Clintons in 2010 is essentially the same thing that went on with the Rosenbergs.
Can we just stop right there? And this isn't you, but the Clintons didn't make the Uranium One deal. The United States of America made that deal with Russia. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton signed off on it, but she was one of, I believe, 12 people for the U.S. government who had to sign off on it. Now, where things get fuzzy is that people who benefited from this received money or gave money to the Clinton Foundation, right?
True.
In different times, you know, either like before, either before or after, depending on how it timed up, because I think there were three different people/organizations, corporations that donated money to the Hillary to the Clinton Foundation, and so they're saying, well, because they made those donations to the Clinton Foundation, then that's why the Uranium One deal was completed, and that's why Hillary signed off on it. I mean, we're just going to completely ignore that there were other people in the government,
and it was done, and it was done in broad daylight,
right? It was done wide open, and it's a frustrating thing. It's been debunked multiple times on multiple fronts. You know, and I guess the real question is, where's the actual harm, right? I mean, if you're saying, well, if the only thing you're hanging your hat on is pay to play, right? Like, so they gave money and therefore they got this deal, then okay. But I think we've debunked your deal or your pay to play deal,
right,
just because of the timing of when those payments were received by the Clinton Foundation. But if that's all you have, like, so let's remove that aspect of it. Where is the harm? What happened here? Where are we saying the harm is?
I'm okay. You know that I'm not saying. I'm quoting Stephen Gorka.
Right. No, I understand. Sebastian
Gorka. Yes,
no, I get that, but it's more of a rhetorical question. Listen, 70% of the world's uranium is found in Russia, in that region, to begin with, right?
Yeah, I think isn't it mostly. I don't know. I can't speak for sure on that. I know it's a lot of it's up there. I don't know if it's stuff that's still controlled by Russia or not.
Right. I don't know who controls it, but I know a lot of it is found there. Right.
A big percentage
that's more than 50% is found in, you know, the Russian Soviet,
former Soviet bloc. Right.
Right. So,
we both know what this is. This is something that is not going to get looked into in any kind of depth. So people are just going to. I mean, I've seen shit on Facebook with, you know, the media running towards collusion with Trump in Russia and then running away from the, you know, a collusion between the Clintons and Russia. And everything you said is completely true. And with a little bit of thinking, you can look at this and say, this is Sebastian Gorka being, you know, deflecting and stirring shit up.
And I'm pretty sure
he said that this is equivalent to what the Rosenbergs did, and they got the chair. So the Rosenbergs is a famous espionage case. So he's basically calling for execute the Clintons. What else do you expect?
Sebastian Gorka is such a joke. You know, it's so funny that Breitbart pumps this guy up and promotes him.
He's
got an accent, and they do this with Raheem Kassan, who actually I can kind of tolerate Raheem Kassan a little bit. He is a, you know, self-hating former Muslim, and believes that all forms of Islam are dangerous and deadly, and he's, you know, the best friend of the United States, even though the guy, I mean, I don't even think
he's the Muslims what Milo is to gay people. It's like, look at me, I'm...
No,
actually,
no.
That's a bad example.
No, it's a bad example. Okay. Milo loves him some gay everything.
True.
Right? This guy...
Especially himself.
Right. This guy is the exact opposite. He believes Islam, like pretty much all forms of Islam, are dangerous and a threat and lead to jihad. And he's written a very, you know, controversial book. And he believe, you know, I mean, he, you know, takes you all around the United States and shows you where Sharia law is taken over. Right. Which I'm just like, okay. Now, yeah. Listen, maybe I'm just.
Well, he says Sharia law is taking over the United States.
He says Sharia law has taken over the United States. It's being embedded in all different, you know, small factions of the country. And pretty soon, like, there's just going to be one kind of gelling and, you know, uniting force that's going to bring it all. And then all of a sudden, Sharia law is going to take over the country. Right, like it's actually going to be a part of our government.
That's been the one of the fear mongering tactics that's been thrown around there. But anyway, I don't want to steer too far away from this because
I don't either. But Sebastian Gorka, he can't be like that guy. The reason why he's out of the White House is because he wasn't qualified to be there, and there was so much that came out that, you know, even conservative groups, other than Breitbart, obviously, started to look into who he was and what he was. They realized that, I mean, the guy's got a past with a group that's almost worse than the Nazis. They're just smaller and less known. You know, his family lineage is to say it's sketchy. would be, you know, would be
an understatement,
right? Yeah. Would be an understatement and a compliment, really. To like,
you're just sketchy,
right? Oh, thank you very much. We worked very, very hard for that label. You know, I mean, the guy is just, he has a number of different check marks against him, and I wish I knew you were going to bring it up, because I could, like, I had a list somewhere of, like, all the reasons,
weird stuff about him.
Like, yeah, all the reasons why Sebastian Gorka sucks. I don't know where it is, and we don't have time to dig it up right now.
But I just remember his educational background was bizarre, too.
I mean, the schools weren't accredited, you know, like, he's got a PhD from Steve and Jim's University of Nonsense. Like, it's crazy. And the guy was in the White House.
Yeah.
You know, he was
right next to Bannon, right?
Yeah. I mean, so.
And they're both gone now.
Right. Well, Bannon's gone, but not gone.
Neither Gorka. You're right. Gorka's still.
I mean, they're still influencing, which is the craziest part, right? I mean, I think they both knew that they couldn't do anything inside the White House once you had people like Kelly and Mattis and Tillerson there. But they figured that, you know, they could still have a major impact outside of the White House.
You called that one right. I mean, we went back and forth about that, you know, months ago. And I really thought Bannon would be much more of a petulant child kind of actor. And I guess to some degree he is. He is doing the whole, if you're part of an establishment, you know, the establishment Republican Party.
He's doing the, if you're either with us or against us.
Yes. But the us is not the Republican Party. The us is the anti-globalist, pro-nationalist.
It's a Trump base.
Trump base, yeah.
It's a Trump base. And so, I mean, he's pushing the Trump base and then, you know, basically grabbing Trump by the hand and saying, listen, I can't do it from the inside. I'll do it for you from the outside. Just hold my hand. Follow my lead like you've been doing to this point. It'll make it easier because there'll be a little bit more distance between them. But that's all that's going on here. Bannon is still – Steve Bannon's agenda is still being carried by Trump. It's not vice versa. You know, this is Steve Bannon's agenda. And Trump says, all right, sounds good. I'll run with it. And he's
as long as they keep cheering my name.
Right. As long as they keep giving me standing ovations and cheering my name and I'm getting attention, I'll go with it. And that's what's happening.
So I guess that's the big takeaway from this is when you hear, oh, the Clintons really colluded with Russia, it's a, forgive the expression, trumped up piece of nonsense. I'm not saying that there wasn't some pay to play. I'm not saying they aren't deserving of being investigated. But to make it sound like this is shifted and turned against the Democratic Party, that's a...
And the argument's been out there. I mean, this whole thing has
been out
there.
It got really ramped up today, though.
I know, but I mean, it's been... They do this every 3 to 6 months. It's been out there. Nothing has changed. They don't know anything new. It's all disclosed. It's all public record.
Sarah Sanders today, three times during that press conference, said, I think we know now that there was no collusion with the president, but if there was collusion, it was with the Clintons and the Clinton campaign.
Well, check. and that's gonna carry, and it will absolutely carry. I mean, she's moving the narrative. She understands her power. She understands her responsibility to the administration and what she can and what she's capable of doing. And she's coming into her own and she's doing it. She knows that she's got Breitbart. She knows that she's got Fox. She knows that she has the Washington Times and the Examiner and countless other every other small little conservative outlet where Trump's base resides. She's speaking to them. She doesn't care about MSNBC or CNN, the Washington Post or the Huffington Post, and she probably shouldn't, right? Because she knows her crowd is trying to form a narrative and move the needle in their direction in their favor. And she knows how to do that. They know how to do it. They talk directly to their base and who their base listens to.
Yep.
And it's working.
It'll continue to work with that crowd. It will continue to work.
And the fucked up part about all this is the Washington Post, CNN, like they're just figuring out what's happening. And what I mean by that is they spent so much time getting caught up in the exact thing that they were trying to prevent. They got caught up in the distraction and the deception and the gotcha moments where it was more important that they, you know, put out a story that made Trump look bad than an actual story that had factual, that was based in fact and was verifiable and true. You know, there. If you look, CNN, the New York Times, you know, a lot of your well-known liberal media outlets, they've been doing retractions left and right from the last 18 months from where they, you know, put out stories that hadn't been vetted, put out stories that weren't true, put out stories that were completely false. And it's not getting a ton of news, but that's happening. And so I think part of our job is to acknowledge that and say, you know, CNN, you made your bed, you're laying in it. This is why they can throw out the word, they can throw out fake news so often, because CNN's got over 50 stories that they've had to retract over the last 18 months. 50. That's not me pulling a number out of my ass. That's the actual number of retractions that they've had to make over the last 18 months.
And the thing about that is the retraction is never as loud as the story.
Never.
And that
no matter who, no matter what the publication
true.
Is.
I mean, right? It's always front page wrong story, page six retraction.
Right. I mean, and
which is one of the huge flaws of our media,
right? But I mean, now you go back and you start to look at page six, and you're just like, "Well, page six is actually 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. What the fuck is going on back here?" And it's not just them. Now, the Washington Post has been better about it. Like their stories, they do a lot more vetting. They're a little bit more selective in their approach and how they attack the situation. Obviously, still a left-leaning media outlet, which is fine.
As long as you have the truth as your number one priority.
The truth has got to be the number one priority. And I would love to find someone that I can trust is objective. To be a news source, but that's getting harder and harder. Everyone is starting to pick sides. But that's what the administration is doing. They're using their knowledge of who their base listens to their advantage and speaking directly to them. Like even I was listening to, I was in Maryland earlier this week, and I was listening to the Press Pool with Julie Mason on SiriusXM on Channel 124, and the person from the Huffington Post was saying they haven't, Sarah Huckabee Sanders hasn't called on me since she has been the press secretary, not once. And that's for a specific reason, right? Because the Huffington Post is a very left-leaning, liberal-leaning media outlet.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but now all of a sudden Breitbart has White House press credentials, right? That's unheard of. Like, I mean, they're not. Well,
you know what we need, Steve, is we sort of have it with Snopes and with other, with a few other things. But what we really need is a truth meter that is attributed to various sites and various media outlets, so that you know, okay, you know, Fox News, CNN, whoever, you put out this many stories, and you were found to be factually inaccurate in this many things. Just so you have like some level of reliability, and I don't know how to do that.
Well, I think what it would require a lot of work, because basically you have to go through, and you know, you probably would do a certain percentage of stories, right? You can't do every story, but you'd have to pick a random selection of stories from each outlet and go back and vet and revet and, you know, follow up with their sources. And if they have anonymous sources, then somehow you track it down. You track the story down as best you can. And then you look at whatever numbers that they put out. You look at them in the full broad context, not in just like a narrow scope, which a lot of times these stories tend to do. You know, they narrow the scope and say, well, if you look at these numbers and you look at these numbers in this context, then this pushes the narrative one way or another, right? As opposed to stepping back and saying, yeah, but if you actually extrapolate the numbers and you look at it in a slightly broader context that is more applicable across the board, then your story completely changes. So why does that happen? And that's the type of effort that you would have to put in.
What about internal policing? What if CNN had a responsibility to countercheck Fox and vice versa? And they had, you know, if they got caught in a lie, they had. Wouldn't that be great?
It would never work.
Wouldn't it be great?
There's no possible way that could
well,
work.
Well, here's part of the problem, right? Is so much that we get shown as news is actually
listen,
opinion.
Listen, these own entities are lying to themselves about what they're willing to put out and what they can and can't put out. So you think you mean to
Well, it was here.
I mean, that would be fun entertainment, but I mean, I think that's taking us down. We've already got enough entertainment.
Well, here's another problem with that, and that is that to a large degree, the MSNBCs and the Foxes live off of each other's mistakes. So they love it when...
No, I don't think they live off... I don't think
you don't think
true.
You don't think, you don't no, think MSNBC because, loves it when...
Yeah, they love it. They love it, but that's...
make money off of it.
They also make money off of just pushing a narrative that... Like, even if Fox never made a mistake and was never wrong, MSNBC could still push just the opposite direction. Right, like they could both survive if they both told accurate stories that weren't lies, that everything was the truth, right? According to them, everything was their truth, right? But they gave it MSNBC gave it a left slant, and Fox News gave it a right slant, and I actually used my correct hands.
Well done.
When
if I would have complimented you on that, that would have been insulting.
No, it's good. I didn't even give it too much thought. But they would both give it their own slant. Right, but they just told their story their way. They would still both make money. They'd still get clicks. They'd still get viewers and advertisers and everything else. Because all things being the same, they're just doing better reporting than the people. Your staunch conservatives are going to go with Fox News, and your staunch liberals are going to go with MSNBC. And the people who are still liberals but don't consider themselves staunch, who think that CNN is giving them an objective point of view, will go with CNN. And then your people who think that they're, by going with I don't know who else is out there, like a NBC News.
NBC as a,
or something like, NBC. Yeah, like an NBC or an ABC or something like that, or a CBS, thinking that, when they do the Sunday shows, and that's giving me an unobjective view, those people are still going to go there. Like, I don't think that...
I do think the Sunday shows still have a lot of value.
I do, too.
Because they do a pretty good job of making people answer follow-up questions and not just spit. I mean...
They still have value, and I think...
God, I miss Tim Russert so much, though.
Yeah, I do, too. Because he was very good, and I think he was well-respected.
It's over 10 years ago, but...
My concern with guys like him in today's media is that he would get dragged through the mud, right? Like Tim Russert, I think, hear me out.
All right.
Tim Russert is a pretty objective guy, and he was a great interviewer.
Yes.
He asked hard questions. He didn't care if you were a Republican or a Democrat. He didn't care if you were well-known or if you weren't that well-known. He called people's bullshit, and he didn't lob softballs. And in today's environment, especially if he did that to a Donald Trump, or he did that to a General Kelly, or he did that to I don't even know who's making the round. Or Tim Russert, in my mind, I feel like, and maybe I'm romanticizing him. I don't think
you
that
will not
I
romanticize
am,
him more than me.
But I have to imagine that Tim Russert would have eviscerated a Kellyanne Conway, right?
Like, oh yeah.
And I feel like we don't have anyone who has that ability to just say, because what's his name? Who's
Chuck,
the guy?
Chuck Todd.
Yeah, Chuck Todd.
Yawn.
He does try to ask.
Yeah.
He does try to dig. But, Tim Russert would just, with the Kellyanne Conway, would just, like, you're literally lying to my face right now.
Yes.
You're just, you're blowing shit out of your mouth, and none of it is true.
That's why I miss him so much.
Right. But my concern is that a guy like him, he's the type of guy that Trump would say, is fake news and everything. You know what I mean? Like,
I think Russert was so respected. And
I don't think these guys even acknowledge any of that shit anymore.
Well,
I think they're willing to tear down anybody that gets in their way or that makes them look bad. I don't the whole thing of respect and, I think all that shit's out the window. I think it's really out the window. I don't think it matters. I don't think you have elder statesmen that get the benefit of the doubt of being objective because they've been doing it for so long and they have the highest standards and have a track record of proven reliability in terms of their neutrality and their
fairness
and everything else. I don't think you have that. I think right now there's a war and the war was
Russia the last one?
Yeah, I don't know. Who's left? Like who?
I mean,
who's left?
Bob Schieffer was pretty good.
Yeah, but
we'll come back to Bob Schieffer though, because there's that'll become relevant.
Right.
One other thing that came up in the press conference today was the Whitefish deal. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're not, the Whitefish Corporation out of Whitefish, Montana.
There's nothing in your glass,
by the way. I know. No, there's a little bit. There's another drop left. And for a guy who gave this whiskey a 5, I seem to be making sure I get every last drop.
Just pour something in it. I mean, this is awkward. You're looking longingly
at my whiskey glass.
Right. It's just like it's awkward. Like, you want me to step out of the room so you can stick your dick in it? Like, what are you doing?
This is radio, you freak. You can just go. Do I want you to walk out of the room? Yes, but for different reasons.
Why? So you can rub your ass on the glass?
Yeah. That's enough. Thank you.
That's enough.
Okay. Not enough talk. It's enough whiskey. Thank you for the pour.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, the Whitefish deal, company out of Whitefish, Montana, has been awarded a $300 million contract. They're responsible.
Can you $300 million. Dollars.
That's A-Rod.
Yes.
That's 10 years of A-Rod. That was actually the deal.
Yes, it was. I don't know. You guys got a World Series. I think it's worth it.
All right.
Yankee fans. How many people worked at the company, by the way?
At one point, the Whitefish Corporation
had two
full-time employees.
When they were awarded the deal, I think they had less than double-digit employees.
Okay. At one point, they only had two. Now, as a person who's a one-person company, I kind of like the idea of a $300 million contract being awarded to small companies. I'll take $150 million.
Listen, you get a $300 million company, fuck you. You're giving me something. I don't care.
We will
work something out.
And we will not be drinking this whiskey.
Listen,
no disrespect, Glenlivet. It's a good whiskey, but if I get a $300 million deal, I'll be making Manhattans with Lafroy. And if you don't punch me for doing that, I will be disappointed in you.
You wouldn't get to that point. I wouldn't let you do that sort of blasphemy of whiskey.
That would be atrocious, yes. But anyway, so yeah, this is a very small company. There is a connection between...
Now, Manhattans with Pappy? That's a different conversation. I would absolutely...
Pappy?
Pappy...
Oh, baby. Okay, Van Winkle. Yeah. Okay, no, that you would lose your fucking mind if I did that.
You almost just got slapped again. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah. Whitefish, $300 million.
So Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke knows the CEO of Whitefish.
Well, why, Jim?
I don't know that. What is their connection?
They grew up in... Ryan Zinke is from the town.
Is he from Whitefish?
Yes.
Okay. I just heard that there was a connection between the two.
Yeah.
That's quite a connection.
The connection is they probably shared the same fucking outhouse.
A little bit dickish, but funny. So
a little bit dickish
because you're making it sound like Montana doesn't have plumbing. They do.
Whitefish, Montana. I don't know.
I don't know that town.
I'm pretty sure Whitefish, Montana does not have a stoplight.
I cannot confirm nor deny that,
and I'm willing to bet that they only have a general store, like that's where they do, all their shopping happens at a general store. There's a big red wagon in the window, you know, like they do, you know, that's probably where they do the lighting of the Christmas tree in the center of the town, right in front of the general store, and they may not have a gas station.
All right. None of this is verified fact, though.
You know, it's pretty easy.
All right. Anyway.
Do we know the population of Whitefish?
We do
Montana?
Not. Why don't I stall while you look that up or the other way around? So anyway, this contract is awarded. And today, Miss Huckabee Sanders was asked about that multiple times. And she said, well, there's
Mrs.
Mrs. Huckabee Sanders. You son of a bitch. Mrs. Huckabee Sanders. If anyone could see how happy he was getting to sneak that in there. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen you this happy. All right. Anyway.
Because that's such a dick move.
It was totally a dick move. And you are so, okay.
Mrs.
Huckabee Sanders said multiple times that, well, you know, this was not awarded by the federal government. It was awarded by local government in Puerto Rico, and there's an ongoing audit. When we know about more from the audit, we will respond. If that's possibly true, and that's something we need to be fair about, if the federal government had nothing to do with that contract being awarded, and if the fact that the Secretary of the Interior did not in any way influence that contract being awarded, then we should not pound on that. But we should keep an eye on it. And
Jim, I don't buy it. I don't buy it on so many different levels. Let's just
call it what it is. Go ahead, bring it.
So Ryan Zinke is from Whitefish, Montana, right?
All right, you've informed me of that. I believe you.
And so he's from there. And it just so happens that this company that's based out of his hometown.
The sprawling metropolis of Whitefish, Montana.
Right. I mean, they've got a population of like 6,000 people.
I guess that shouldn't surprise me. But
The company's only been around for 2 years. Right? How do they get this contract, right? The company's only been around for 2 years. You know, as of... 6 months ago, they only had 2 employees, and now all of a sudden they position themselves to be ready to mobilize and, you know, reignite the energy source for the island of Puerto Rico. I don't know. And if you read the story, like there's a couple different stories, but if you read the story on Slate, which is, you know, not a conservative outlet at all. But the timing of when they got the contract, right? I mean, according to this article on Slate, they got the contract 3 days after Maria happened, or after Maria hit. So, you know, and the government's response is, well, they were the first ones who responded, who could do it, you know, who could do it in the time frame and with all the different parameters, they were the first one to be able to check all the boxes.
So here's an article from The Hill, which I've read their articles before, although frankly I don't have a strong enough opinion in my head right now of, you know, their political leanings. But they have an article, and the headline is Whitefish Energy Contract Bars Government from Auditing Deal. So I will write about that on WhiskeyCongress.com tomorrow.
Wow.
If that's true, I will expose that.
Hey, we're a small little two-man company. So that's literally me and you starting a company.
We want $300 million, $299 million. Right. We will save you $1 million.
We'll save you $1 million. And also, you can't audit us for how that money gets spent. Are you kidding me?
Please don't. We just tweeted that story out, by the way. So
wow, that's unbelievable. So you can go check on our... By the time you guys get this, you'll have to scroll down a little bit.
Right.
But actually, we can pin it. We'll pin it to the top of our feed on Twitter.
If that's true...
Even if this wasn't sketchy because it's a two-man company, and now according to the article, they're growing by tenfold.
I'm sure they are. They got $300 million.
They got $300 million. But, some of those subcontractors are charging like $400 per hour for some of the different work that they're doing. But, of course, they can.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's 100% price gouging, and they can do it because, I mean, it is an emergency situation down there. I read a horrible story of, you know, people in the affordable housing, obviously, you know, I work in affordable housing here in the U.S. and in our region of the world. It's a complicated job. And it's complicated because affordable housing is often like the last resort housing for people in the situation, right? They don't make a lot of money. There's not a lot of potential for them to make any more money. A lot of older people with disabilities who are on a fixed income, who don't have an opportunity to work anymore or make any more money than whatever they're living off of. And so in Puerto Rico, you have a lot of people who are living in affordable housing who were either elderly or non-elderly disabled or elderly and disabled. who are just basically dying where they are because they're disabled. They don't have a way to get out of their homes. They don't have access to food or clean water. They don't have electricity. They're you know, the conditions are brutal, whether it's hot or it's stormy or whatever. They have nothing, and they also have no way of contacting anybody. And there are volunteers that are looking out for them and trying to go find them where they are, but they're not all, there's not like a, you know, when you look on the maps, when you look on Apple Maps, there's a pin that tells you exactly where to go. If you're on the ground in Puerto Rico, you don't have that, right? Like, I mean, like you're literally going door to door. A big deal was made about a month ago when Trump was in Puerto Rico and was talking about the death toll. Right. I don't think we don't have final numbers on that death
right
toll
now. Yet. Or today is at 51, but right. Right, it's not final.
Right, it's not final, and it's not going to be Katrina. Right, I mean, right. You know, I mean, Katrina, we saw an unprecedented number of deaths in that situation for so many different reasons, you know, that had nothing to do with George W. Bush, right? I mean,
right.
Which a lot of people blame Bush for what happened, but there was a lot wrong with that situation. When you look at all the different variables that led to it, I mean, he might have been able to save, you know, 100 people or 1,000 people, might have been able to save a couple hundred people, which would have been phenomenal for those families. But in reality, that was a nightmare situation. And this is also a nightmare situation.
Yes, it is.
And so, again, we have this nightmare situation, and this is the company that we're gonna trust with bringing back electricity, so that these people have air and, you know, clean water and filtration, everything else that goes along with a
this is something
properly that, working electrical grid.
This is something that the media and the government need to stay on top of, because again, if that's actually a Founders, not a homebrew, so you didn't. So we had an incident earlier today when Steve started drinking a homebrew straight out of the bottle, and it's got yeast in the bottom of it. And now I actually gave you a commercially made beer, which is a fantastic beer, Centennial IPA by Founders.
So anyway, back to the media Puerto Rico. No, you're right. They do need to stay on top of this. And here's the other thing. They need to stay on top of this deal, but the media needs to stay on top of what's happening in Puerto Rico in general.
True.
Right? Now, a lot of Puerto Rican people are doing a good job of saying, hey, don't forget about us. It is still a clusterfuck down here.
Right.
We don't have electricity. We don't have clean water. We don't have the supplies that we need still.
In this media world of the shiny object gets all the attention.
Right. And so, you know, you commend the people that are still fighting that fight. We, as a citizenry, we have to do our part and pay attention. We have to keep paying attention, and we have to keep doing what we can. Right? Now, you know, you only have so much money that you can give to a cause like this, right? And there's only so much that you can do.
Only so much you can trust who you're giving your money to.
Right.
It's a sad thing.
Yeah, but I mean, still doing what we can as a group to bring attention to it, still to pay attention to the stories that are putting out there. I think you and I, you know, we have we have an audience. We have a platform. It's not huge.
Not huge. Working on that.
You know, we're working on it. We're working to grow it and expand it. But I think we still have to use the platform that we have and the audience that we have to let them know. And so, you know, everybody stay vigilant and stay on top of it.
That's all we can do at this point. And we do need to hold those who take advantage of situations like this accountable, because it is disgusting when people take advantage of.
By the way, we need to start a small company, and I think we need to start looking for government contracts. I don't care what. Cleaning dirty toilet brushes.
I know you've seen War Dogs.
Yes, I have seen War Dogs, and that movie motivates me every day of my life. I don't care. I will sell all the guns in the world. My Wood Jr. would probably stab me in the neck. But I mean, to make the type of money that those guys made in a short amount of time, it'd be worth it. I'll deal with the repercussions later.
Yeah.
Mike, don't hurt me.
Way to go with the ethical. You were on such an ethical rant a minute ago.
I know.
And I was like, make me rich, be rich.
I know. I would love to do a bath of, like, just bathe in money. Like, just have random, like, naked chicks throwing $100 bills at my face.
Okay.
Bam, bam, bam.
Come out of fantasy land. We need to talk. See, we're doing so well. And then I go on a beer sidetrack, and then you talk about your fantasies about naked chicks throwing money on you, which would be awesome. Thank you.
As long as you acknowledge,
I'm not going to lie. So one other thing happened today that a couple other things happened today, but the House passed a budget bill, which leads to the possibility of the tax reforms going through, and that's concerning to me because in that press conference, they actually asked the question you brought up on the last show about 401k tax deferments being slashed, and Mrs. Huckabee Sanders jumped through hoops
to avoid it.
To avoid that. She's like, we're looking into things and we'll see what happens. Next question. I mean,
they're going to cave on it.
And for all the reasons you pointed out, if you want to cut taxes on rich people but bring in enough money to fund an increasingly sized government, rob the masses of tax breaks.
So the weird thing about this is if you just look at the numbers, right, the times that we've cut taxes, we've seen economic growth, right?
Not always. Not always.
Well, hold on. All
right, go ahead.
Just hold on. Kennedy did it. Reagan did it. We saw growth.
Yes. Now, in the case of Reagan, we also started spending. We started deficit spending in a way that we had never done before.
Right.
And Bush did it, and the economy collapsed.
Right.
And Clinton raised taxes, and the economy boomed.
So the question is, I don't know how much fight we have to stop this, right? I don't think we have. We don't have the numbers, right? We don't have the House.
You mean politically? You're correct.
We don't have the House. We don't have the Congress. We don't have anything. And you know, which again, that is the downside of losing elections, right? Like you can cry and whine about it all you want and talk about it's not fair and want an impeachment, but you lost, and you lost because your strategy was fucking terrible, which I told you all along, but nobody fucking listens to the black guy.
All right.
But that being said, you lost the election. You don't have the House. You don't have the Senate. And so part of it, I have to wonder if the strategy is let them do it. How can we even fight it?
Yeah, well, I think what we talked about last show is a bit of how we can fight it, because there are some Republicans who are saying, okay, this is just too far. No, not doing it. And those particularly Jeff Flake and Bob Corker and McCain has been staunchly in the face of the president. And that swings the Senate, and most of these things need both houses. So this got through the House. We'll see how it does in the Senate. It narrowly passed in the House, and the House is
I'm curious to see. I think Flake will go against it. I think McCain will. I'm not sure if Corker will.
I'll bet he does.
You know, and again,
Susan Collins.
Susan Collins, and you know, they all have the nothing to lose. Well, I don't know. Susan Collins, I think, is actually still running again, but I think she has a lot of support in her state. So. I don't think
she's... Yeah, I think she's fine.
Yeah, I don't think she really is worried about anything. We'll see. And part of me wonders, is it worth it to let it go through, to watch it? You know what I mean?
I know what you're saying. I mean,
you know what I mean? Like, part of me is just like, fuck you, let it burn. Where I'm from... You know, it's just that Youngstown mentality, like, hey, I've given you advice and now you're not going to listen to me, so fuck you, go punch yourself in the face.
Go walk across the street with your eyes closed and see if you get hit by a car. The only reason I don't like that mentality is because you brought it up a minute ago. Reagan cut taxes and the economy grew. True, he also spent money like he was a frat boy with a credit card and threw money at the military like there was
There's a lot of fiscally responsible frat boys.
Okay, I apologize to the fraternal institutions of this university. Actually, I don't. But you are just having a blast today.
Because I know you hate frats.
I do. A lot of college stories from that. But, Reagan still gets credited with being the great communicator, the great whatever. If you judge this guy based on his performances, first of all, if you judge him based on his military performances, all you've really got is... Beirut and fucking A. The tiny island.
Granada,
thank you. Yeah. And so we performed horribly in the Middle East, cut and ran, which was the smart thing to do, and then went to Grenada and said, look at us, we can kick ass. And there's even a lot of stories that suggest that's been overly glorified. In any event, the reason I don't like that idea of let it go through and prove that they're wrong is 30 years after Reagan, they're still claiming he was the greatest thing since sliced bread. So, and if you're willing to deny reality on so many other things, I don't know why you wouldn't deny whatever Trump does for that crowd.
I mean, other than Nixon, though, what president do we actually really, like, hate? You know, I mean, modern.
Do we hate or do...
No, I mean, I'm saying in general, no one really gets a bad rap.
You're kidding?
Who?
Look at what people have said about Obama. Look what I've said about George Bush.
Oh, I think Obama's a little bit different. He's fresh out of the spotlight.
True. And there's still people trashing Bill Clinton. I mean, look what the economy did under Bill Clinton. And yet there's people who... Now, he did about 3 or 4 years outside of his presidency. The tone did go down. And then when Hillary ran, it got ramped back up.
I don't know. I mean, I think Clinton still... I mean, I think Clinton... got a lot of romance and leeway up until the last...
Till Hillary ran.
No, I mean, till Hillary ran this time.
Right.
Right? Right. I mean, until Hillary ran against Trump and you know, people, I think, did a good job of saying, hey, by the way, you called, you know, like you called black men super predators.
Young black men are super predators.
And with everything that, you know, Clinton got through, like, you did, how much did you really help our cause? You know, speaking, you know, me as the voice of the, you know, the black community, because everybody would vote for that. they're dripping with sarcasm, by the way.
Understood. I haven't had so much whiskey that I couldn't pick up on that.
So, I don't know. You may be right. I don't know. I just feel like Clinton got a lot of, you know, pats on the back and handshakes for...
Yeah.
For what he did for a long time, and I think it got brought back into the forefront recently, but then it kind of died down, you know, and I think Trump is using Clinton, I mean, because there is definitely a sketchy thing about the Clintons, right? Like, I mean, it's there.
Yeah,
And
so much shit was made up that it's hard to parse what's real and what's not, but there's definitely some
There
was Paula Jones, there was Monica Lewinsky, there was...
Whitewater was a thing, that was real, right?
Yeah and no. I mean, the Whitewater investigation produced a blowjob.
Right.
Which means I want to work for Whitewater, but don't you get shitty with me after what you just did there, tough guy. All right. One other big thing that happened today was the JFK document release, which kind of...
Make it rain.
Some stuff was held back, which I was disappointed to hear, because when you say some stuff is held back,
this is my thought on this. It was kind of a nothing burger, right?
Yeah. So far,
here's the deal. I didn't have the time today to dig through, you know, 2,500 documents. I don't think you did.
Maybe I did not.
So this is what I say we do. We let a much larger, well-equipped organization comb through it, organize it in a searchable fashion, and then kind of get back to it. Now, I did look. I was actually I was in a meeting. And I did my portion of the meeting, given my sort of kind of update and timeline and everything else.
Right.
And this guy gets on from our company who I really like, but he's awful on the phone, like just between his voice and his heavy breathing. It's terrible. So I put myself on mute and, I put the call on speaker.
Oh, that's so awesome.
I turn the volume down and then I immediately go to the archives and I look at it and I start to kind of...
And as long as no one says, Steve, what do you think about this?
Right. All I do is listen for my name. Right. If you don't call me by name, then
that's awesome.
If they were to just say, like, since I represent the development department. If they said, hey, in development, what do you think? I probably would not respond. Like, I mean, they'd probably, we'd sit there in silence until somebody said my name. So, but nobody did, and it worked out. So, but I also didn't find anything. And it was, you know, it's funny. It was a lot of what you said, a lot of microfiche that you couldn't read, a lot of, you know, documents that were typed 50 some odd years ago that you couldn't, you could barely make out and read. So that's expected, still disappointing, but I don't think that there was anything in there that lit a huge fire, but there are some questionable things. You know, the one thing that I wasn't able to dig into was the thought that, you know, the American government was thinking about a tactic of basically attacking Cuban refugees, people that were fleeing Cuba and going to Florida, and basically bombing them and making it look like it was the Cuban government who was bombing them to basically make Castro look bad and that regime. And that raises some questions and raises some eyebrows. It was a thought. It's in there. It's documented. So
the times are very odd, right? Because Cuba had been overthrown by Castro. Cuba had been such a happy hunting ground for the mafia. I mean, if you watch Godfather 2, you've seen it in the movie. That movie is pretty historically accurate. I mean, I know a lot of times I talk about movies and maybe perhaps give them too much emphasis, but I do know a fair bit about the history of Cuba. And basically, the mob had set up casinos and prostitution rings and all these things in Havana, like 90 miles from Miami. So they were literally able to avoid the law entirely avoid the law entirely. So they had a place that was 90 miles from Miami where they could do whatever they wanted. And then Castro overthrows Batista, and that all went away in a hurry. And the mob was pissed. You need to jump in. Hold on. Steve with breaking news here.
It actually is. And this, because this may give you a stroke. But the Bills just traded Marcell Dareus to the Jaguars for a 6th-round pick.
There'll be a pause in Whiskey Congress. This is getting recorded because I'm about to lose my fucking mind. What? You're right. This could a 6th-round pick and that's it?
It just came across. Right, and normally,
why is it not on mine?
I don't know because I'm tied in, bitch. <You're> gonna...
Okay, this hold on. My phone should be blowing up if this is true.
The Bills will get a 6th-round draft pick. I mean, that's according to Ian Rappaport, and that's rap sheet. So
all right, okay, nothing showing up on the Bills app. All right,
it's come through.
You get mad with me at me for derailing things, but you couldn't resist this.
I couldn't. I'm because I knew this was coming.
This was will. If this is true,
this is a vein pumping through your neck.
Fucking mind. You don't trade away. Oh, fuck. All right.
So,
yeah.
Other than that,
this has been probably your favorite episode ever. You got to jump with snarky corrections. Now this is shit's happening. I'm not sure you're not behind this. I'm not sure you're not going to tear off a mask and be fucking Vladimir Putin, who I put it. You know what? I put an article out on WhiskeyCongress.com.
You did. It was
Putin
good
today. Now this is you're working with Putin. I knew it.
Trump's
I knew
second it all biggest the favorite time. Fan. So,
you like that?
I did.
All right. You know what? All right. Speaking of the NFL, so
I just right. I, well the here's the I, actually so we'll. So Bob McNair made a comment during the meetings that we referenced in our last show,
right?
That the inmates essentially were running the prison or the asylum, and a lot of players took this very offensively. Which, you know what, in their position they should have, because Bob McNair, you're an owner, you're a billionaire, you got to know how to navigate these waters, and he chose a very poor selection of words. You know, referencing inmates and prison and everything else, considering what the players are upset about and what they're protesting, he made the mistake, and again, he made it from a negotiating standpoint,
right.
from a business standpoint, I don't think he, in my opinion, I don't think Bob Annaire looks at the players as inmates.
Right. It's an expression.
Right. I mean, it's a commonly used expression, but nonetheless, you have to be aware of what's going on. You have to be aware of your surroundings and your setting. And that's where, you know, these owners are playing it a little too loose, because I think the players' union maybe has a little bit more power than the owners are acknowledging and respecting. I think there's also an issue with, I think they have more support, public opinion, backing them up than the owners are willing to acknowledge and accept. And the people that are supporting the players and the players' union in this regard, those are your fans, those are your viewers. And at some point in time, you have to acknowledge that you're alienating them with your behavior, right? I mean, because part of it is the players are alienating the white Trump base with their behavior, or the white people who just hate all controversy, right? They're just like, I don't care about this one way or another. I just don't like arguments.
You're talking about race.
I'm so uncomfortable. Oh my God, I hate it.
Why do you have to talk about race? Why do you have to do
it? Don't do it here. Just do it somewhere else, because you know football's fun, and don't make fun stuff not fun. And so that's a big kind of that's part of the problem is. The owners aren't looking at the people who side with the players as valuable, right? Like, because there is a faction of the population, of their viewership, who says, you know what, I agree with the players. And the owners are looking at the people, only at the people who are offended by the players, right? And the players are saying, look at us as players and look at the fans that look like us who are backing us. And then, so as, you know, Bob McNair, as the owner of the Houston Texans, has to be more aware.
When's the last time you saw a fan wearing a jersey with the owner's name on the back of it?
Only in Pittsburgh.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? Well played, sir.
Only,
you're right. You're probably right.
I have.
The only places it might happen are technically Pittsburgh and Green Bay, where it would say Green Bay on the back.
Right.
Because the city owns a team.
But no, I mean, I've seen Dan Rooney jerseys Steeler jerseys with Rooney on the back.
I hate that I set that up for you, but yeah, I can see that because I do know how beloved they are in the community. But for the most part,
through the league.
Okay. But especially in their own community.
Through the league.
All right. You're right, but I'm not saying it.
Okay. Well, you already did.
Okay.
President Obama agreed with me.
But you're not going to see...
Sent Dan Rooney to Ireland.
You're not going to see... Bills fans loved Terry Pegula when he bought the Bills. I've never seen a Bills Pegula jersey.
Right. I'm sure Mr. and Mrs. Pegula have them, right?
I'm sure they do.
What's his first name? Terry?
Terry Pegula, yeah.
Terry.
And Kim is his wife.
And they own the Sabres as well.
They own the Sabres as well. Right. They do.
Okay. Because I wrote a story referencing them.
You got Terry Pegula's right?
So I,
you know, or something mind. Like that's, that.
Yeah, right. Behind the curtain.
I wasn't trying to call you out, but
no.
There was,
and I'm glad you caught it. But there's a reason why that happened. That didn't have anything to do with me. Anyway,
all right,
going on.
All right, let's one more thing about the NFL is that Justin Timberlake is doing the Super Bowl show this year.
Bullshit.
He's not.
No, he is.
It is bullshit. Okay, why is it bullshit?
Well, Justin Timberlake was on the stage, and a major reason, a major part of that whole Janet Jackson nipple incident, right? Like, I mean, like they were dancing together, and he literally ripped her.
It was a wardrobe malfunction, Steve, because we're all that stupid.
Okay, fine, whatever. Janet Jackson has basically been ostracized by the NFL. She can't come back. She can't do it ever again. Justin Timberlake was there.
He was the perpetrator.
He was the one who did it, right? And
Nipplegate does not happen without Justin Timberlake.
Right. And so afterwards, and I don't know if you remember this, but he kind of threw her under the bus. Like, he made a bunch of apologies to the NFL and to the media and everything else, and then basically put it on her, saying it was her idea and everything else, and he didn't mean anything by it, and he thought that it was all in good fun, and he just made every possible excuse under the sun. Janet Jackson never apologized for it. She never really said anything other than her only apology was, it was the, sorry if I offended anybody, it was a wardrobe malfunction, and that was it.
Okay.
And Justin Timberlake went through the whole, well, I didn't know what was going on. And she said it was her idea and I didn't know. And it was, but it was a wardrobe malfunction.
And what were the words that were said right before that action? You'll be naked before the end of this song, I believe, are the lyrics.
Oh, right. Yeah, I mean, and I mean, well,
so the whole wardrobe malfunction was such an insult to our intelligence. It's like, Okay, you made a bad decision in your performing art.
I don't even think it was a bad decision.
Actually, it was an awesome decision.
I thought it was great. I was like, oh my God, I just saw boobs. I like that. Right? I mean, it's 2004 or 2003.
Three, I think.
Whatever. I was into boobs then.
I was still into them now. I remain pro boob.
But I think it's kind of bullshit. I mean, I think it again, with the league, bad decision after bad decision after poorly thought out decision.
Let me ask this.
You let Hank Williams Jr. comes back to Monday Night Football, and they say, oh, well, he's got some black guys, and they do like a little rap thing in it, so that makes it okay. All right, so we'll let Justin Timberlake back in, but we have no – and now listen – we haven't seen the Super Bowl. We haven't seen the show. So maybe Janet Jackson shows up.
That's what I was going to say is what are the odds that they don't?
Now, if they did that and she shows up and then she like pulls his shirt off or something, which would be funny.
That would be.
Then I would say.
No one will go nuts about that.
Right. I mean, all right. Well, my bad. And I'll own that. So, I mean, you know, JT and JJ, you know, figure it out.
She just had a kid not that long ago. So I don't know if she's interested in performing.
She's on tour.
Okay.
I haven't been to a concert.
I've been following. Shocked to know that I've not been following Janet Jackson's music.
I follow Janet Jackson because
I don't blame you. She's awesome.
Phenomenal. She was just in Vegas a couple weeks ago. I didn't go to the show, but I saw images. She looks great.
Okay.
And yes, she did just have a kid, and she's 50. So
as a man my age who's not quite 50, not even close to 50.
She's older than you.
She's older than me.
And she
looks better than me.
Yeah.
Yes. I will not dispute that for a second.
There's just no other way to put it.
I'm totally fine with that being publicized.
But yeah, she looks fine. So she, I mean, and by the time the Super Bowl.
I'm going to go out of my way and predict she will be there. Want to put a bottle of whiskey on this?
Oh, man, because I don't know if I disagree with you, but I don't. You know what? I'll play the role of, you know, militant, doubtful, pro-black guy and say she will not be there. We will put a bottle of whiskey on it. Minimum price is $85.
Oh, we're going there. Okay.
And we can surprise each other.
Perfect.
Got to spend at least $85.
At least $85. Good whiskey. Whatever it is from there. Deal.
Right. So don't get fucking 9 bottles of 10 High.
No, one bottle.
$85
minimum. Deal. We'll fist bump on it.
There it is.
Let's close it out.
All right.
You done?
Yeah, we're done.
Thanks, man. Good talking to you.